Well, our speaker this morning is the alumnus of the year, Dr. Neva Troe, class of 85. He's been teaching here for 26 years. Is an accomplished professor in his field, but has thought deeply and quite movingly for me personally about our vocation as Christians. I'm really grateful to be a part of a college community that has a man like this. So, Neva, welcome to this homecoming chapel.
Well, welcome, alumni, especially those of you whose graduating class ends with a 0 or a 5. You have come back to your alma mater for your reunion. You have come back to see old friends and to reflect on your experiences here. I'm a member of the graduating class of 1985, which means that I, like many of you, have had many years to reflect on my Westmont education. In the next few minutes, I would like to share a few of those reflections with you. But first, let me show you a picture. Do any of you remember this? This is Nathan Epidermis and the Coppertones. They performed several Spring Sing side acts in the early 80s. Here's a clip of one of those side acts. Well, 30 years have passed, and times have changed, but Westmont's core mission to deliver a high-quality liberal arts education remains the same. The liberal arts originate, at least etymologically, from the Latin term artes liberales. An education in the artes liberales meant an education for the liberated, or free person. It was an education that prepared a person to live a good life and to meet the responsibilities of conscientious citizenship. Martha Nussbaum, in her book, Cultivating Humanity, says that a liberal education is a higher education that is the cultivation of the whole human being for the functions of citizenship and life generally. In recent years, perhaps because of the Great Recession of 2007, and perhaps because of the increasing cost of a college education, a liberal arts education, and even a college education itself, has come under increasing scrutiny from politicians and the media. Sparse times can make you a utilitarian, and the question is, of what utility is this costly college education? The answer has come back loud and clear. An education is only as good as the salary you can earn after graduation. For example, under the Obama administration, the Department of Education recently launched a website called collegescorecard.gov. This site rates colleges primarily on one criteria, the salaries of its graduates. Now, I'm not saying that salaries are unimportant, but to make salary the only criteria upon which a college is scored seems to me to be both problematic and short-sighted. This emphasis on the functional utility of a college degree does not come only from the current administration, but from other corners as well. In a recent speech, Republican presidential candidate Carly Fiorina spoke of her Stanford degree in medieval history and philosophy as leaving her all dressed up and nowhere to go, and that it left her unemployable. Well, she eventually went on to become CEO at HP and is now a serious contender for the Republican presidential nomination, so her education seems to have given her some useful skills. Most students today equate a college education with a good job and a higher income. Results of a 2014 yearly study of American freshmen administered by the American Council on Education reveals that 86% of American freshmen cite getting a good job as a very important reason for going to college. And nearly 80% cite to get training for a specific career as a very important reason. But of course, this raises the question, why do they want to have a good job? The answer is, most probably, to live a good life. And I'm sure that many of you have seen the plethora of articles that reinforce this idea by ranking college majors and programs based solely on immediate employability. For example, U.S. News and World Report recently ran a piece entitled, "Discover 11 Hot College Majors That Lead to Jobs." Among the majors listed are computer game design, biometrics, cybersecurity, and data science. Now, these majors are important, I know. And it's probably true that students who complete these majors can get a good job upon graduation. But I'm worried that the skills that these majors provide may come at the expense of other skills that last a great deal longer, skills that last a lifetime. I am worried that our current emphasis on immediate career success upon college graduation may make us lose sight of what makes a life authentically interesting and successful and good. I saw the same utilitarian mentality at my children's elementary school a few years ago. The school administrators took a parent survey to determine which enrichment program was more important, technology, which amounted to learning PowerPoint and Microsoft Word, or Spanish. The parents overwhelmingly chose technology. Really? Is learning how to make a presentation on PowerPoint, a piece of software which may be gone in 10 years, really more important than learning a foreign language? A language that will still be around when those kids are 70? A language that teaches students not only to speak into another culture, but to understand their own culture and their own language better? I voted for Spanish, but was outnumbered. So in light of the current conversation, I would like to reflect on my Christian liberal arts education experience and invite you to do the same. You must first understand that I did not consciously choose this type of education. In fact, as a high school student, I knew nothing of the liberal arts. My parents immigrated to the U.S. from Havana with my two sisters in 1959. Neither of my parents went to college, or even high school for that matter. In my mom's time, in Cuba, women were only educated through the sixth grade, and my father's family was too poor for him to attend high school. My family did not want to leave Cuba, but they were driven out by a government that put my father in jail. His only chance of freedom was to leave. So my immigrant family had no idea of the liberal arts. Education to them was practical. It would get you ahead in life. I chose Westmont kind of by accident. My neighbor was going there. She was smart and cute. So I thought I should go there too. And so in the fall of 1981, like many of you, I moved into Page Hall to begin my Christian liberal arts education. And like many of you, 4 years later, in the spring of 1985, I graduated. And now, 30 years have passed. They go fast, don't they? What has this education given me? And what have I been able to give back? First, this education has made my life more interesting in a number of ways. For example, I remember taking Acting 1 as a student. I was a terrible actor. Couldn't act my way out of a box, really. But one of the requirements of that class was to go to plays, and so I did. I went to plays at Westmont, and at City College, and at the Ensemble Theater Project in town, which is still alive and well, by the way. I had never gone to plays in my life, but that semester I learned to love theater, and I still do. That love of theater spilled over into other arts as well. Just this last summer, I was lucky enough to travel with my wife and four children to Paris. We went to the Louvre and put our kids on a treasure hunt to find the 15 most important works of art at the Louvre, which we had read to them ahead of time, of course. The hunt was on. We saw the Mona Lisa, but even more exciting were the Venus de Milo and Liberty Leading the People and Psyche Revived by Cupid's Kiss. If you have never sat before a great work of art and been deeply moved, you simply have not lived. I'll never forget that day, and many others like it, and I have my Westmont education to thank for it. Second, my education taught me how to think and how to ask questions. As a freshman, I took Jim Minoia's Introduction to Philosophy class. Again, not because I wanted to, but because I had to. It was part of the GE requirements. As we studied the great thinkers of history, my own abilities to think clearly, to reason, and to construct a valid argument were formed. In a small way, I was taking part in a conversation that began thousands of years ago, a conversation about the big questions in life. What is important? What is a good life? Is there a God? What is moral? I have, of course, chosen a life in academia where I have the privilege of continuing to engage big questions. But had I not explored them in college, in Jim Minoy's philosophy class, I don't think I would have the same interest in them today. Third, my Christian liberal arts education widened my view of the faithful Christian life. Before I came to Westmont, what I heard in church was that the Christian life had three main components: pray, read the Bible, and go to church. It would seem, from a high school youth pastor's perspective anyway, that all Westmont really needed was an RS department. But Westmont had an English department, and a biology department, and a political science department, and it took the truths that came from those disciplines seriously. And not only that, my professors at Westmont seemed to believe that their work in those disciplines was their way of serving God. In other words, at Westmont I learned, for the first time, that what is often called secular work can actually be sacred. Dorothy Sayers puts it this way: the church has forgotten that the secular vocation is sacred, forgotten that a building must be good architecture before it can be a good church, that a painting must be well painted before it can be a good sacred picture, that work must be good work before it can call itself God's work. I remember Bob Wenberg, who also recently passed away, talking of religious revival on campus when I was a student. But it was the strangest revival I had ever heard of. In Wenberg's revival, students were not only filling up the prayer chapel, but also the library. At Westmont, I learned that my Christian service was not just saving souls, but also redeeming knowledge. Fourth, although the liberal arts aspect of my education may not have given me immediately tangible job skills, I credit it with my career success. I'm proud that 1/3 of college students taking general chemistry today, including students at elite universities like Stanford and Berkeley, are using a chemistry textbook written by a Westmont professor. I have authored 5 chemistry textbooks, and 4 out of the 5 are number 1 bestsellers in their respective markets. Now, don't get me wrong. Authoring textbooks is not the highest form of academic success, and many of my colleagues here at Westmont have accomplished far more than I have. But nonetheless, I think that the success of my books is a direct result of my Christian liberal arts education. When professors at other universities are asked why they adopted my book, they typically point to 3 factors. Adopters say that, first of all, my books are well written. The language is clear and concise, they say. The examples are vivid and specific. Students actually enjoy reading it, they say. Well, writing ability is a core liberal arts skill, because learning to write well is equivalent to learning to think well. I can't tell you how many topics in chemistry I have come to understand only after being forced to write about them. Learning to write well has been a lifelong process for me, but it began here at Westmont. Adopters also say that my books show the relevance of chemistry. In other words, they put chemistry in the context of greater human knowledge. Some of my reviewers are surprised to find a section on Kuhn, a historian and philosopher of science, in a general chemistry textbook. But that is exactly what it's missing from our information deluge society. We don't really need more information. We have more than we can ever want, right at our fingertips at any moment. What we need are ways to organize that information and to put it into context and frame it in the scheme of greater human knowledge. That's what the liberal arts did for me. It showed me how all knowledge is ultimately connected. The liberal arts allowed me to see the forest from the trees. Adopters also say that my books show their students how to solve problems. My daughter once came to me with a word problem from her high school algebra class. "Dad," she said, "I don't even know where to begin solving this problem." The problem boiled down to solving a simple algebraic equation, which she could solve in her sleep. But getting from the words to the equation was an exercise in critical thinking. An education that is focused too narrowly on only solving algebraic expressions does not teach you how to think critically and solve problems. But a liberal arts education does, and that's what I put into my book. But wait, how can it be that I am saying that career success is a result of my liberal arts education? Didn't I spend the previous 10 minutes talking about how career success was a poor motive for seeking a college education? Let me explain. Seeking immediate career training in college without seeking broader skills is like trying too hard to be cool. It's ultimately self-defeating. Let's see, do you 1985 grads remember the coolest guy in Page Hall our freshman year? It was arguably Dave Eaton. All the women wanted to date him, and all the guys wanted to be him. But here was Dave's secret. He never tried to be cool. He engaged in a range of activities that simply resulted in coolness. But he never sought it, which made him even more cool. Contrast him with the poor guy who always tried to be cool but never was. I won't mention any names. A college education is the same. Focusing too hard on a narrow set of skills that will prepare you for a specific job might get you that job upon graduation, but you make huge compromises on the skills that give you lifelong career success. You might be surprised at how many people make significant breakthroughs not by thinking more narrowly about a subject or problem, but by thinking more broadly about it. Let me give you two examples. The first is Andrew Geim, winner of the 2010 Nobel Prize in Physics. Most successful modern scientists work in a narrow field of study, chipping away at a problem that they have become experts in. Andrew Geim also worked this way, but not all the time. Geim often ventured into what he calls lateral ideas. These were explorations into fields far from his immediate area of expertise. Over 15 years, he explored about 24 such ideas. These explorations became known as Friday night experiments, even though they took much longer than just one night. Most Friday night experiments were complete failures, but some succeeded. For example, in one Friday night experiment, Geim was able to suspend an entire frog in a magnetic field. In another, he developed a new kind of tape based on mimicking the toes of a gecko. However, his most successful Friday night experiment was the discovery of a new material called graphene. Graphene is the thinnest material ever known, only one atom thick. It's also the strongest. It conducts heat and electricity, is transparent, and completely impermeable to all substances, including helium. Although its many possible applications are yet to be realized, graphene may one day be used to make our computers faster, to make foldable touchscreens, ultra-thin light panels, and super-strong plastics that can construct any number of things. And how did Geim discover graphene? By wandering into fields far from his expertise. In fact, Geim discovered graphene not with a sophisticated, highly specialized instrument, but with a piece of scotch tape that had been adhered to what amounts to a pencil lead and then removed. The tape had remnants of graphite stuck to it. When Geim examined the graphite flakes under a microscope, he realized that these flakes were surprisingly thin. In fact, some of the flakes were just one atomic layer thick. Over the next several months, Geim and his colleagues were able to isolate these flakes and measure some of their properties. In 2004, Geim and his colleagues published their results, the discovery of atomically thin carbon, in the journal Nature. Ironically, graphene has been there right under our noses for some time. Every time you write with a pencil, layers of graphite flake onto the paper, leaving the familiar gray trail. The trail undoubtedly contains flakes of graphene, too small to see. Geim was able to see what others had missed, partly because he wandered away from his highly specialized area of expertise. And as a result, he discovered a new wonder material. My second example is Steve Jobs. Now, I'm not a Jobs fan. I don't own an iPhone or a Mac, and I prefer Google Play Music to iTunes. But I do admire Jobs' accomplishments and his ability to think broadly and creatively. As you probably know, over 30 years, Jobs transformed several entire industries: the computer industry through the Mac, the movie industry through his work at Pixar, the music industry through the iPod and iTunes, the mobile phone industry through the iPhone, and the publishing industry to some extent through the iPad. How did it all start? Well, at least part of it started at a liberal arts college. Even though Jobs never finished college, he took a calligraphy class at Reed College that was instrumental in launching his first major breakthrough. Jobs says, In that calligraphy class, I learned about serif and sans-serif typefaces, about varying the amount of space between letter combinations, and about what makes great typography great. It was beautiful, historical, artistically subtle in ways that science can't capture, and I found it fascinating. He also said, if I had never dropped in on that single course in college, the Mac would have never had multiple typefaces or proportionally spaced fonts. And since Windows just copied the Mac, it's likely that no personal computer would have them. It's that kind of insight and connection between fields that simply cannot be measured by job utility at graduation. So that's what I think my Christian liberal arts education has given me. What have I been able to give back as a result? Well, that's probably better left for others to decide, but let me mention one thing I hope to give back, both to my students in my courses over the years and to the students that use my books. I hope that, in some small way, I have been able to show them the awesomeness and intricacy of God's creation at a deeper level, and that that knowledge makes their own lives richer and deeper. You see, earlier I said that if you have never sat before a great work of art and not been moved, then you have not lived. Well, I also think that if you haven't sat on East Beach and picked up a grain of sand and realized that there are more atoms in that grain of sand than there are grains of sand on all of East Beach, then you also have not lived. And you certainly have not experienced the full range of God's creation and our human ability to understand it. I hope that, in some small way, my teaching and my books contribute to that sort of understanding and awe. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and God bless you.